treason, traitor, Trump. We're going to be talking all about Michael's favorite topic, Donald Trump. Also a little bit about the debate. For people listening, it's been almost 2 years since our last episode, and we might just a little bit rusty. We're like that old married couple that quit having sex, and now we've got to get back into the swing of things now that the kids are going away to college. But really, it was like November 2017. So now we're into the Trump administration, 3 years in. He's almost done with his full term. I mean, was it everything you hoped and dreamed it would be?
Oh, it was so much more than that.
Your wildest fantasies have been fulfilled?
Absolutely.
You know, his approval rating, it's like the same. And you almost have to wonder, like, really, what could this fucking guy do to some of the people? And I'm more liberal now than I was 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. But when we ended the conversation, I think Trump, he's pushed me to be a lot more liberal than I was when we ended the conversation. And I wondered if you had a similar reaction, or wherever we left the conversation, where would you say you are now?
Probably still in the same place. I don't think that Trump is the type that going further left is going to beat him. I just need to get him out of office. And I don't know that going that far to the left is going to pull in the group that swung the election are not these crazy far left people. Not saying all left wingers are crazy. The Bernie type.
Thanks, Michael. Where most Democrats are, I'm to the right of them on, I would say, guns. And I think where a lot of liberal people are, I don't want to mischaracterize you, but maybe you're a little bit further to the right than they are on abortion.
Yeah.
And even though Trump, he comes in and they're like, oh, well, you must really like the guns or whatever. I don't think there's anything he could do on abortion or guns that would win us over in terms of that. Like, I think he's a master. He kind of collects these single-issue voters. So, like, immigration and guns and abortion and cultural grievances, racist. You know, he sort of collects these groups that really only vote on one or two things and don't really pay attention to, but the Russia investigation is confusing for them. They don't really follow it. They don't understand it. The day-to-day stuff about foreign policy and the Iran and Paris Climate Accords, all that's like, huh? But all they know is that he's their man on some of these kind of really primitive issues people in high school could understand pretty well.
Yeah.
I thought about where we ended the podcast, and it kind of would have been your nightmare to continue because the last 2.5 years have been nothing but Donald Trump. Even when we started it, way back in, like, January 2016, you were like, I just don't want to talk about Trump that much. So I'm kind of curious about your personal, your mental state, because for the last 3 years, it's been a nonstop, like, here's what Donald Trump ate for breakfast today. Like, it's been all the media fucking talks about. He dominates the conversation in so many ways. What is it like for you to just wake up and see, like, the newspapers, the TV, your worst enemy everywhere?
It's turned me off from really watching TV, watching the news, really reading anything. And I hate to say that, like, kids will come up to me at school and they'll ask me if I heard about something that happened. And I'm like, no, I didn't. The media does not get off of him. Either, you know, one side praising him or one side literally blaming him for everything. He's there. And I just had to quit watching.
In a way, I think that's part of his strategy, which is to just kind of repel people so much that so many liberals and even moderates and just say, it's just hopeless, we can't beat this guy. But it kind of does two things. Number one is it turns us off to where we don't even want to watch TV or we're just not as politically engaged. But then on the other hand, people that are sort of still independent or still swing voters or whatever, you know, all five of them left in America, I think it inoculates them. It gets them so used to him that no matter what he does, it looks normal. The frog pot, you put the frog in the peak of water incrementally and it doesn't jump out. But, I mean, if you put it in a boiling pot of water, it would jump out immediately. But that's what he's doing. Since he declared his candidacy in 2015, I mean, this is 4 straight years where we've seen this man on television every day.
Yeah.
You do get sort of so used to him that it's like nothing is really outrageous and nothing shocks you. And then I think people get to the point where they're like, well, it's the devil I know, and I don't know a lot of the Democrats. I'm worried about that. Right. So it's like we just sort of take what he does as normal.
Not only is he on the TV every day, but you can't open up social media and see him constantly tweeting everywhere.
He is his own media industrial complex. He's his own walking shitstorm because, like you said, he calls on the Fox News every day. He tweets all the time. If the media is not talking about him, he'll do something to put himself back in the news. People say, well, it's narcissistic personality disorder, which is true. If you're not talking about him, he's going to start tweeting about Kardashian's ass, or he'll find something to put himself like, it is his personality just to be that way naturally. But it's one of the signs of a dictator. The conversation is always about them. It's always about, like, when people talk about Venezuela, when Hugo Chavez was alive, it was, do you like him or do you not? And every fucking issue in a country like Egypt, is it good for Mubarak? Is it not? Russia, is it pro-Putin? Is it anti-Putin? And so it boils every fucking thing down to, is this good for the leader? Is it bad for him? And I think that's part of him tweeting, him being on the news, him putting himself out there. The real danger is it gets you inside his way of thinking. His consciousness sort of absorbs you. They'll even say it, like somebody will make a joke about fucking something that has nothing to do with him. Like they'll crack on country music and he'll be like, oh, Trump's not going to like this. We know how our president feels about everything. I mean, if there's a black person in a Papa John's commercial, he's going to tweet about how bad it is. The fact that we know how he feels about shit that presidents should not care about, we're in his consciousness. Like, we know how he thinks, and it's sort of like smothering out independent thought. And I think that's the real danger, that everything gets boiled down to, is this bad for Trump, good for him? And his fans absolutely think that way. They've almost lost the ability to independently think. I mean, when there's a controversy, even if it has nothing to do with him, Trump is pro-police shootings. During our hiatus, this was like last year, but there was a story about there was a black guy sitting on his couch and a white female cop basically broke into his house and shot him in his living room and said, oh, I thought it was my house. Like, this was like the most outrageous story. Oh, you broke into your own apartment. And a lot of the comments from conservatives, they were really pro-woman shooting a defenseless man in his own fucking living room because they thought that's what Trump would be for. And that was sort of how they associated it. And I think that's terrifying. To have like a collective mind like that.
His followers are just completely desensitized to everything. The photo came out of the man and his daughter that drowned. Just reading the comment on social media that Trump supporters made on there, just outlandish. Talking about, well, that's what he gets for trying to enter our country illegally. Yeah. Maybe more people will follow his example, or maybe more people will end up like him, and just ridiculous stuff like that. It's out of control.
And he didn't create it, but I think he's loosened it. This heartlessness that really has just invaded. We're going to talk about it in another episode, but I had a race-based situation with my son and his school. And because he's black, the second that I put on Twitter, because I thought, well, I'll go on Twitter and the social justice warrior mob, they'll come to my defense. No, 95% of the comments were conservatives telling me to shut the fuck up. And I guarantee you, if I'd have said, well, this white blonde kid was trying to pray in school in this public school, expelled him or whatever, they would have totally run to my defense and talked about the racist mob. But the second I said he was black and booted from a private school, well, he didn't belong there anyway. Stunning that people felt comfortable just saying that. Things that have happened in the break that we've been off. I mean, I remember that Caesar Sayoc guy, right before the midterms, he mailed like 15 pop moms or whatever it was to all these liberal people. And Trump's fans, they didn't come through and said, oh, this is a domestic terrorist. Even if they'd have said nothing, it would have been better than saying, this is Nancy Pelosi gave him those bombs to mail to herself.
Yeah.
So that so people would feel sorry for the Democrats. And they immediately short-circuited that into like, oh, this is bad for Trump. They didn't think like 15 people could have died, or this is kind of scary, an entire political party can be attacked like this. They short-circuited into like, this is bad for the leader. And Trump even said it. He goes, oh, this guy totally fucked up my momentum and stuff. He said that out loud. So the episode title is Traitor, Treason, Trump. You know, we are living in two different Americas. I mean, I don't know where you're at exactly, but I think we all agree Putin helped Trump win the election. He definitely helped Trump become president. If Putin hadn't interfered, I don't think Trump would be president.
Yeah.
And I'm of the opinion that Trump did not really win. I don't think he won the Electoral College. And people say, well, that's outrageous. A Russian teenager can hack into a nuclear power plant. Like, the Los Angeles power grid has Russians in it. They could turn off my lights right now if they don't like what I'm saying, you know. So if we lose the call, it could be the Russians. So they can do that, but they can't hack a voting machine in Sheboygan. These fucking antiquated voting machines that everybody knows are not secured. Like, oh, just kick it in the base, it'll start back up again and shit. I mean, everybody knows these machines are really outdated. Like, they don't work properly. I just don't think it's credible to be like, they couldn't do it. So anybody that tells me that they couldn't do it doesn't know. But people say, well, we have no evidence. Yeah, but who would have to look for the evidence? The attorney general. Donald, should we look in the voting machine? You shut the fuck up. Don't ever say that again. They're never going to look into that. Like, I think he doesn't have America's best interest at heart. I don't think he cares what's best for America. I think Putin he either has blackmail on him or some kind of financial ties. There's some reason that Trump is very close to Russia. And so I look at it as like there's a sleeper agent, either witting or unwitting, in the White House. The scariest thing is Trump is not a Russian agent. Then he's doing such a good job of impersonating. Then there's no difference.
Yeah.
So that's where people like me are at. But then people that are conservative, they don't see it. Like, they literally can't. Because when you come in and you say the president's a Russian spy, it sounds like the Manchurian Candidate. It sounds like a James Bond thriller. Is there a way you found to explain that to people that sounds credible?
No. I have no idea how you get that through to them, because this election's one that the Democrats are going to have a really hard time with because of their messaging. And it's one of those things that if they keep bringing stuff like this up, they're not going to get anywhere, because his supporters don't care. They don't believe it. They don't anything. And literally that gives them fuel for their fire to go out and just make fun of the Democrats even more, because they think of how ridiculous it is. Like, I don't even try anymore. Living in the South, it's, you're literally wasting your breath. Talk about this stuff with people, because they don't care. They don't see it. They don't want to see it.
You got to save your breath, because those coal fumes are coming in.
Yeah, Trump's at the G20, and he literally openly joked about Putin hacking the 2020 election.
Yeah. So I did this thing for about 10 days in kind of like around April, and I would watch like about 5 minutes of MSNBC and about 5 minutes of Fox News, and I would try to see what they're talking about. And MSNBC, I'm not kidding, 10 times out of 10, they were talking about the Mueller report. But on Fox News, 7 out of 10 times, they were talking about immigration. So it was all about immigration, all about the border, all about just anything you could think of. Trump went to the border, or he said something about the border. Somebody farted, and it kind of sounded like the word border, so they talked about that. I mean, it was anything you could think of to do with Mexicans and immigration and caravans of immigrants and MS-13. And two of the other 10 times, they were talking about Ocasio-Cortez. So they do seem to have a special interest in her for whatever reason.
Oh, yeah.
And I just looked at that, and I thought, not one time did they talk about the Mueller report. It was Ocasio-Cortez or the border, which they view as the same thing. I think they kind of conflate that, like, Ocasio-Cortez is from Mexico, and if they could have stopped her from immigrating, they could have stopped this whole, sort of mixed these two things up. So it's all about Spanish people and socialism and the encroachment of that. But MSNBC was going in-depth in the Mueller report. I don't even know if people saw this, but in the Mueller report, there was something in there that said that one of the Florida voting districts was hacked. I don't even know if people know that that was in there. What I thought was the most important thing was that. It said there was a voting district in Florida that got hacked. And they didn't say if it influenced what the results would have been. They didn't say how bad it was. They didn't say if it was systemic. I mean, the second I saw that, Mueller should have been like, oh, we need to subpoena every district in Ohio, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. All the swing states needed to come in for not a recount, but like something where they look at the machines and whatever he discovered in that one Florida district. Wouldn't you think that'd be the kind of thing you'd want to see if it was systemic or not?
Yeah, I would.
He was halfway on a bass boat by the time he got to the end of it.
Yeah.
It kind of looked like he was over it by the time they came out with the full report.
Yeah.
And it was a letdown. I think a lot of liberals put a lot of hope into that report.
They did.
That it was going to be the be-all, end-all, instead of maybe doing some of the work themselves, or now that they're in the House of Representatives, why don't they start going through voting machines and start looking at different things?
Right.
And even if the Attorney General won't do it, maybe they could order it. I guess I disagree with Nancy Pelosi about this, but she says we can't impeach Trump because it'll guarantee he's re-elected. If he's not elected in the first place and Russia rigged it for him, they're going to do the same fucking thing again. But Trump only got 11% of the vote. Too bad he won the Electoral College. It'll be even more lopsided. I don't see what their thinking is. It's like, if he rigged it the first time in 2016, of course he's going to do it in 2020. And so how can you beat a man who you know for a fact is going to cheat? So why wouldn't you try to impeach him?
Yeah.
I mean, he's told us he's going to cheat. Because at other places, they're like, well, we don't know that. So they're like, no, I definitely am going to. She's like, shut up, man, and I'm trying to save your job. Pelosi keeps having to justify reasons why she's not seeking impeachment. Trump's practically daring her through a fucking water balloon full of his own urine at her. I'm daring her to impeach him.
Yeah.
And I think he thinks it'll be politically beneficial to him. I don't know about that. Because whenever people say, well, it didn't work against Bill Clinton, it's a very different circumstance. A blowjob in the Oval Office, sure, Republicans cared, but most liberals were jealous. We're like, damn, that sounds like a hero. You know, like, that sounds like Shaft or James Bond or something like that. That's a badass president getting blown in the Oval Office. Even if I weren't a Democrat, if you tell me, well, Bush, all the war crimes Bush committed, like, well, we're going to impeach him because Ann Coulter gave him a blowjob in the Oval Office, it just wouldn't be what I would give a shit about. And that's his business. So I think comparing Clinton's blowjob and lying about it, which is kind of default for married guys. Did you get laid by that? No. I mean, what are you supposed to do? Go out in Congress and be like, oh, yeah, Hillary's going to have my balls in the mason jar. Even because Clinton left office about the time Hillary was coming into it. So some of the subsequent investigations through Congress, she did have to hear that crap as a senator.
Yeah, she did.
like whatever Republican succeeded Ken Starr is like the ultimate snitch. Like, hey Hillary, just so you know, I saw your husband at the club last night. I saw him with this girl. But there is a big, big fucking difference between what Clinton was being impeached for and Trump. A blowjob versus treason. It's not the same universe. Pelosi and all these Democrats saying it would be politically unpopular. I don't think it would. I mean, I know people say, well, you're a Democrat, you're a liberal or whatever, but I just don't think it would be. Every single week we see a story, Pelosi and Schumer, and it's not just Trump. They could stand up to Mitch McConnell, but they won't do it. And every fucking week we see them back down, and this is why, I don't know where you were on this, but I got some heat on Twitter for saying that when they were challenging Nancy Pelosi, I wanted her challenged. I didn't want her to be reelected to the Speaker of the House when the Democrats
No, I didn't either.
It is age. I know, but every time you say something, people go nuts. Oh, you don't like Bernie and Biden because of ageism. And I'm like, no, I mean, I have eyes. I consider they're too old to do the fucking job. Like, people only say that about politicians, ageism. Imagine Biden going down and being like, I want to try out for the track and field team. They'd be like, well, you're too fucking old, you know? I mean, like, it's just not realistic to think a man in his 70s can do the job of being president, Donald Trump included.
Right, yeah.
But, yeah, with Pelosi, she had been doing it for so long. I don't think people realize that in the time she's been the leader of the House Democrats. So she started out as the minority leader, then the majority, then the minority, now the majority again. In that time period, Republicans have had five separate leaders over their House of Representatives. And by the way, during the time she's been the leader for the House Democrats, they've been out of power two-thirds of the time. There's only two parties. It's like, I've lost more than I've won. Reelect me to do the same thing. Until the last year, three-quarters of the time. So I just don't think it's the winning record. I mean, and every time she is in there, anytime she could really go after Republicans and really challenge them, she just seems very reluctant to do it. Like, they really have to push her to do it. Her staying in there and doing it again is like Barbara Boxer. I've told people that I live in California now, and Barbara Boxer, she's my senator technically. I just don't even see her that way because she's 84 years old.
Yeah.
She just won re-election, so she'll be either 90 or damn close to 90 by the time she – I could see her – in 2024 being like, one more time or something like that. Like she's going to be the first 100-year-old senator. Republicans do this shit. Fucking Strom Thurmond and people like that. I mean, old Republicans from the South, like a 100-year-old senator from Mississippi. That's what we're used to, like Thad Cochran dying in office or somebody like that. Like we're used to, like, deep South senators. Well, if we could just get rid of the Negro problem, this is 2019, sir. I think you don't understand, like, I thought I was running in the 70s again. I lied. I lost track of time. But for liberal Democrats to keep running Bernie Sanders and Joe Biden and Nancy Pelosi and Barbara Boxer, it's really no surprise that there's not a bigger push to get rid of Trump because there's not a big push to do anything. Chuck Schumer looks like he's happy if he's got a bowl of oats to eat in the morning. He just doesn't look like he's motivated to do shit. And, I mean, all of us are sitting like, Now, the Pelosi's like, we're going to get to getting rid of Trump sometime between now and 2028 when he forces himself into a third term. So don't worry about it. I'll still be here by then. Even before he ran for president, he had a very, very close relationship with Russian Putin. Could he be working as a Russian agent?
I think it's possible. You know, if we could investigate it, then that'd give us our answers. But
Alabama liberal broke the news. Or something. They'll be like, all I had to do was just go to the courthouse and request a piece of paper or something. But like the House Democrats and the IRS and all the FCA and all these people. And my experience dealing with the government has been like that. I just feel like it's all right there. Like he's a Russian agent. What if Melania is his handler? Because that's something I thought about too.
Yeah.
Because Melania fucking looks like that bitch that a Bond villain would date. Like the guy, whoever, like the Bond villain goes out with, and like Christopher Walken's girlfriend in the Bond movies. A henchwoman. People never point that out, that he's the most anti-immigration president ever, and he's got the only foreign-born first lady in America's history. Somebody Adams, who had like a British father or something like that, but obviously England and America were practically the same fucking place at that time period. So, I mean, really, she's the first true first lady to be an immigrant. We got to get rid of immigrants before that. She's like right beside him, and his fans don't see any weird disconnect there. They don't see anything strange about that.
No, they don't.
You know, you can almost see his fans be like, well, of course, if it's an Eastern European supermodel, we don't care about that. That's not who we're talking about.
Exactly.
Melania. Maybe he's his handler.
That would explain a lot. That would explain so much.
it would explain their complete lack of affection. Well, they don't seem like a married couple when you watch
yeah.
them. Because even political couples, they fake it. I'm sure yeah. Bill and Hillary, there are days she wanted to stab him, but they kissed, they hugged, they held each other's
yeah.
hands. You know, he would put his arm around her. Even while this man's been investigated for cheating in front of Congress and almost impeached, she's over there, mm-hmm. like, giving him a back rub and shit. And then Trump, during his biggest policy success, he could be like, oh, I just saved the world. Melania's like, well, you're not sleeping in my bed tonight. I don't give a shit what you did.
yeah.
So, I mean, even, like, no matter what he does, she seems kind of bored. She seems kind of like she's not into it. I almost wonder if that's what Trump likes about her, is that he can't
yeah.
please her. And so he's got that kind of, like, narcissistic itch to, like, win over this woman who clearly doesn't like him. It's like, oh, you'll love me by the end of my presidency. And she's like, less every day, Donald. Less every day. And it's like a trophy he's competing for. Incredibly bizarre courtship. And just the way he refers to her. There was one interview where he's talking about her with, like, a piece of meat. Because she's very
yeah.
top quality. Everyone knows Melania is of the highest quality. Like, what if he checked, like, he chips, pulls off her skirt and checks her for marbling or something like that? He's just like, yeah, I gotta make sure. That's just the thing. I was about to say the whole country's talked about Trump being a traitor, but they haven't. And so you've got half the country that thinks he's treasonous, that thinks he's traitorous. Because, I mean,
yeah.
even the Mueller report, even though he bent over backwards not to outright call the president a traitor, I think the stuff that he did find and the stuff that he said, he's like, well, if we didn't think the president had not committed the crime, we would have said so. He's bending over backwards not to call the president a crook, but you know it's on the tip of his tongue so bad. Like, he wants to
yeah.
say it so bad, and you wonder
right.
why he doesn't just say it. You talked about in one episode, when there's that much smoke, it's hard for there not to be some kind of fire. And with Trump,
yeah.
I mean, Michael Flynn, his chief foreign policy advisor, chief national security advisor, indicted. Paul Manafort, his campaign manager.
Yeah.
Roger Stone, his oldest political advisor and friend. Michael Flynn, his personal attorney of 30 years. Don Jr. clearly had a meeting with the Russians, even though he wasn't indicted. Jared Kushner seems to be taking money from everybody. Seems like Jared Kushner is so
yeah.
fucking, like, one day, literally ISIS comes in there and is like, Jared, what'd you do with that check? He's like, I took it from you, same shit. You know, like, he's just taking money from anybody. I mean, he just seems to be on everybody's payroll. Their story came out that Jared Kushner, the CIA, recommended he not have a security clearance.
Yes.
And he's like the president's man. And just a couple of days ago, Rex Tillerson gave an interview where he said his time as Secretary of State, he was told, like, basically not to do anything. Jared had it covered. And so Jared
yeah.
Kushner was going around to all these meetings without Tillerson's knowledge. He said he would show up for a meeting with a diplomat and not know Jared had met with him 2 days ago. Cause it's almost like Jared does the real shit. He goes and is like the spy. And he does the real,
yeah.
like, okay, so we're going to give Russia everything that they want. And then Tillerson shows up 2 days later, and he's like, wait a minute, I thought I was supposed to betray America. Somebody already beat
yeah.
me. They beat me to it somehow. The fact that you've got Kushner, who doesn't seem to have any qualifications to do foreign policy work, going around the world representing America's interests as Trump's son-in-law, what the hell's up with that?
Keeping with the whole dictator theme, it fits. It fits that narrative, you know, you got to keep it in the family. His most trusted people, I mean, honestly, is Jared and Ivanka. That's why they're sitting at the G20 with him. I mean, why else would they be there? He's got to surround themselves with family. There's some wild conspiracy against him. He has people.
And when you say wild conspiracy, you mean factual reporting about he gave out a statement. This is when he was thinking about overturning some of the regulations on the Chinese tech companies. So there were tech
yeah.
companies, he said, were spying on America. I mean, everybody pretty much agrees they're a front for Chinese
yeah.
intelligence. And
yeah.
then he was going to overturn those regulations the same week that China allowed Ivanka's purses to be sold there. And I think he
mm-hmm.
went back and changed his mind. But people have associated Jared Kushner with payments from China. I mean, it's almost
yeah.
like within the Trump White House, Jared and Ivanka are like, we don't need to sell out the country to Russia. China will pay us more. So it's
yeah,
almost like they're
exactly.
competing to see, like, which hostile foreign government. Something that slipped through the cracks that maybe people saw in the last couple of weeks was Mitch McConnell's wife, Elaine Chao, who Trump appointed to be the Secretary of Transportation. Her family has an import-export business that does direct dealings with the Chinese government. And they said
yeah.
that, like, members of her family have personally met Xi Jinping. They have a very close relationship with some of his top advisors. And so I'm sitting here thinking, like, people are always like, well, how come Mitch McConnell never stands up for American interests? And it's like, well, maybe he's married to a Chinese spy. When people start hearing this shit, they're like, well, Brody, you're all over the place. Trump's a Russian spy. Melania is his handler. Mitch McConnell's married to a Chinese spy. Like, which one is it? But that's kind of how espionage works. I mean, governments, they want as much access as they can possibly get. Like when the CIA was infiltrating governments, they wouldn't just want the president's wife. They would want the vice president's son and the general of the joint, you know, like uh-huh. they want to infiltrate at multiple points. Russia has all this access to Trump and his inner circle. China feels left out, so they get their hooks in the Kushner somehow or another. And then Mitch McConnell's wife. If you look at what Mitch McConnell has done since he's been the Senate Majority Leader, him working for a hostile foreign government certainly makes more sense. Any other thing that we've been led to believe, it definitely fits with what he's done in his time as in office.
I didn't know he's done anything.
Exactly. America's like, well, we need to pass a budget. Hell no, no budget. We're going to let the economy default. You know, China's over there licking their chops like, yes, America, make the worst possible decisions and shit. You know, like they come in, they're like, hey, Mitch, all we need is a rubber stamp. We're going to build a, you know, we're going to build some wind farms and solar panels. No, we're going to build coal plants that don't even work. All they do is dump sludge. Like the coal plants don't work. They dump sludge directly into the fucking ground. Even the coal industry is like, hey, Mitch, it's okay. We can close some. We're just going to switch to oil. It's no big deal. He's like, no, we'll have those coal plants or else, damn it. What you're saying is true. He's done nothing. That kind of kills America through atrophy. When you have a country that is just not doing anything, can't get anything done, and China and Russia, they're maneuvering all around you. China's investing in education. They're building all these huge public works projects. They're going green. They're doing solar. They're out-competing in technology. They're getting all this shit done. And McConnell's over there like, well, you know what's going to come back? The typewriter. So why do we need to invest in technology? Even atrophy can kill a country while all these countries are just maneuvering around you so much. You know, I've said before that empires, they don't get killed, they commit suicide. And that's true with Rome or Greece or whoever else. I mean, it's constantly infighting, spending too much money on the wrong things, wars abroad, trying to do too much abroad, too little at home.
Yeah.
And America can't pass a fucking budget.
Yeah.
Forget all the stuff that the Democrats want to do, which I agree with the vast majority of it. But, I mean, how can you wipe out college debt or pass Medicare for all, or invest in education, or fight a Green New Deal when Republicans, they won't even pass their own budget. Literally, McConnell's Senate would send a bill to the House. The House would say no. Then the House would send the bill to the Senate. They'd say no. I'm like, the party doesn't even agree with itself. You know, I could literally see Mitch McConnell going up there and go, here's my own budget, and here's why I don't support it. Fuck this piece of shit. You know, and then he throws it in the trash. He writes it in his own hand and talks about how great it is, and then sets it on fire with the other hand or something. Like, he don't even agree with himself to the extent that he can pass his own budget. And to me, that is like sabotage, foreign sabotage. When you have a government that is just incapable, filling a Supreme Court vacancy for over a year, and then even when you do, it's like, let's get Brett Kavanaugh. They have like 100 conservative justices. They could have easily just gone to somebody else.
Yeah.
And it would have made any difference. Because Democrats couldn't fight it forever. So they say no to Kavanaugh, then they go to somebody else. McConnell's like, no, we're going to force somebody who's extremely unpopular and divisive and unqualified down your throats, and he's going to be the most unpopular Supreme Court judge in decades. And we're going to do that on purpose so people lose faith in the Supreme Court. We're going to do it so that people just become completely disillusioned and think they're powerless to stop this creeping autocracy, and then they just zone out. I get everything that I want or whatever. But, I mean, it would have been so easy to do just a PR victory and say, okay, Kavanaugh's out, and conservative McTurd over here, he's in. And the fact that he wouldn't do it is just Mitch McConnell showing you, I don't give a shit about PR. I don't care.
Yeah.
McConnell's over there, no matter how bad it looks, won't pull a Supreme Court vacancy, won't pull an unpopular judge, no matter how bad it looks. And Pelosi's over there like, well, only 60% of America supports impeachment. We need to get it up to the high 90s before we do it. It's just striking how badly Democrats want to be liked by people who will never do it, and how much McConnell does not give a fuck. Man, he doesn't care.
Yeah. Well, you know, it kind of shows the difference in the parties, too. You have the Democrats who have this big conglomeration of different types and different subgroups that they have to try to please everybody, whereas the Republicans, they have their base and they don't care. Pretty much do what they want to. They're not going to lose support. Democrats, if they don't do a certain thing, and we've talked about this in podcasts, you may do something and completely obliterate your support from one group of people, or, you know, if you do something wrong, you're going to upset this group of people. And the Republicans don't have that issue. And I think that's an issue that Pelosi is fighting with when it comes to doing stuff.
Like we talked about in the beginning of the episode, I mean, Republicans have a lock on single-issue voters. And so all they really have to do, the business Republicans only care about one thing, and the abortion people and the guns people and the immigration people, but just those four people I just named, those are all single issues. And that's probably half the country that votes on just that. So when you can lock down those four groups, and then with the Democrats, well, I like what Kamala Harris said about prison reform, but she didn't mention transgender dolphins. They're almost trying to do too much stuff at the same time. And it's almost like people get disappointed if they don't. Like, I mean, I'll answer your question excellently on climate crisis and say, but they didn't point out how that's going to affect the trans community or whatever. I mean, like, and it's almost like they want them to incorporate everything into that answer. Yeah. And all Trump has to do is go out there and say, abortion's wrong.
You know, you mentioned Kamala. Everybody agrees she won the debate last night. You know, I turned the TV on today, and it just happened to still be on MSNBC from watching the debate last night. They have her campaign manager or one of her supporters on there basically questioning her about, not about the good job that she did last night, but attacking her for apparently flip-flopping on whether or not to allow private insurance companies to exist. Like, she's apparently changed her mind on that.
And that's the Democratic Party. That's what they have to deal with.
Let's talk about the debates, because I think they're really showcasing. It's just so staggering. There's 24 candidates. I think there should be 21 that drop out tomorrow. Like, I'm not really thinking that there should be like three people running for president. Because, like I said, we're trying to stop a traitor, a treasonous president, a tyrant. And the problem is, he's got a field to himself. He can raise $1 billion, and the Democrats are going to spend $1 billion to defeat each other before they ever face him. And that's the problem with Elizabeth Warren raised $6 million, Kamala raised $12 million, Beto raised $10 million. I mean, all this shit, they're going to spend a fortune just to get past each other before they even get to him. And I've seen Democrats, they've come Medicare for all and wipe out student debt, and give everybody a job through the Green New Deal. And they've all said, we're not going to take corporate PAC money. But I've not seen any of them say, why don't we stop spending money against each other? If we all agree to this and sign this pledge, not one of us spends another fucking dime than we have to just to get from state to campaign. But no more pamphlets, no more TV ads. Why do you need $6 million for one quarter for a race that's still a year and a half away? Like, people said, oh, Elizabeth Warren, she didn't have a good quarter the first quarter of 2019. Well, the race is November 2020, but she's a year and a half away, but she still raised $6 million, and they consider that not good. That just speaks to the fortune that they're going to spend getting there. Meanwhile, this aspiring tyrant in the White House, hey, Koch brothers, give me half your fortune to keep a gay mayor or a black woman or a socialist out of the White House. Sure, here it is.
Yeah.
And what kills me about people like the Koch brothers, the amount of money they spend to keep people like Obama or whoever out of the White House, they could pay that in taxes. Like, all the shit they're worried about, like, they're going to raise my taxes from 35% to 38%. We can't have this shit. Let me spend $1 billion to keep that from happening. I'm like, all the money you spend to own representatives and senators and presidents, you could pay probably half that in taxes, and we would shut the fuck up. I don't understand it. But, yeah, I mean, in terms of the debates, you've got 20 candidates. They had to put it on two different nights. It looks like a bunch of clowns. And I agree, Kamala Harris, so people that probably listened to the last few episodes and have seen some of my YouTube videos, they know that I'm kind of in the bag for her. Like, I'm pretty much a huge Kamala Harris fan and really want her to be the nominee. I do think she could beat Trump, but I also think she'd be a good president, unlike Bernie or Biden, to be honest with you. You know, I do like her a lot, but when you've got 20 candidates, most people think Julian Castro won the first night, and a lot of people think Kamala Harris won the second night. And I'm like, okay, so they made the case for themselves, and Biden and Bernie and Elizabeth Warren, they consistently poll in the top three, so why don't everybody else quit? And then there's four candidates who didn't even make the debate stage. Joe Sestak, people probably don't even know who this is because he just entered the race like 3 days ago, as if anybody was like, you know what, we need one more fucking person. Well, we really need, like, the first 23 candidates are not doing it for us. Let's get an ex-Pennsylvania congressman who blew two chances at the Senate because he ran for Senate twice, an election most Democrats wanted to take. He's the best thing that ever happened for Republicans. Pat Toomey beat him out for something that he easily should have won. Hold on. You need a failed congressional candidate from Pennsylvania to come in here and show you what's missing. Rolling Stone did all the candidates. This shows you the best and the worst of Democrats. They showed their signature policy, so the policy that they're most putting forward, and then their signature apology, so what they've apologized for. Just so far, even though both of these people have only been running 3 or 4 months, they've already had to apologize. Every single one of them just about has apologized for something. So the best and the worst right there. Joe Sestak, his signature policy in that Rolling Stone piece I'm talking about was he knows a lot about the world, you know, which is like any drunk at any dive town bar is like, you know, let me tell you what I know about the world, my friend. The School of Hard Knocks gave me my degree.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And the only other person who didn't have a policy was Joe Biden. So he's sitting at the top, said his signature policy was that Trump created racism somehow. And now he's going to go like he's going to defeat Trump and defeat all the shit that's happened. I guess forgetting that when Obama was president, the Tea Party and Mitch McConnell, and so let's talk about that. But they've all got kind of their own policies and their own issues. Biden seems to be running specifically that Trump is responsible for most of these problems, and I don't know what the fuck he's talking about, because Trump is terrible. He's a terrible president, a terrible person. But when Obama was president, he literally came to Alabama. He tried to give Governor Bentley a check for the stimulus. He said no. He tried to give him unemployment insurance. He said, fuck off. He tried to give him an extension on Medicaid. He's like, get out of here. They wouldn't even take Obama's money. That's how bad it was. And this is years before Trump. I know Biden, what he's trying to do, which is to say, I'm a uniter. I can work with anybody. I mean, maybe some of the people that hated Obama will like Joe Biden because demographically appealing to them, that it's not going to change.
There's something different about him.
You know, Biden don't say it. He's like, you know, just a couple of cool young guys out of the town. Or like, he's wearing a leather jacket, get his hair slicked back and sunglasses. He's like, hey, baby. What if it's Joe Biden's vibe, like all the people candidates running, he's in like a bachelor type show or something like that, and they all have to compete, like, who gets the bucket, you know? He's like, well, I don't like her attitude, but I'm going to go with Kamala. In terms of individual candidates at the debates, was there anybody that really stood out to you doing a great job and a terrible job? The people who did a terrible job, we need to really try to winnow this field, because it just looks awful to have 24 candidates running and spending money.
You know, I put it on social media. I think the one candidate that needs to stay in it to the end, Marianne Williamson. Yeah.
I mean, her and Trump would be a debate for the ages. But if she could do an exhibition debate against Trump, I would rather watch. Well, then that's the money to my charity, and then it just goes to himself or something like Jared's in the back with like a collection plate. He's dumping it into the Trump hotel or something like that. But, you know, during the debate, I was disappointed that she wasn't crazier. And I feel like the NBC executives, like during a commercial, they come out there with a note. They're like, hey, we could have had Steve Bullock out here. You need to amp up the crazy. Like, you need to really... So these candidates, the four that didn't make the debate stage, Joe Sestak, Wayne Messam, Seth Moulton. So Steve Bullock really should be up there. He's the governor of Montana. Needs to be heard, I mean, in terms of a Democrat in a dead red state. I mean, Montana went for Trump by like 20 points or something, and he's been the 3-term governor of that state. And I thought he would have been a great person. And I also like him because he used to be a prosecutor, and he knows a lot about dark money. So like I said about their individual issues, Wayne Messam has a lot of issues that Elizabeth Warren has kind of stolen, but like obliterating student debt, statehood for Puerto Rico. He was sort of talking about a lot of these things before anybody else was. And then you have Seth Moulton, who I think his big issue is like I was the serviceman. He talks a lot about his service. It does matter, but I think anybody who's impressed by that is probably going to go for Buttigieg because it's just easier at this point. And then you've got Steve Bullock, whose signature issue is he wants to get the dark money out of politics, because he's basically saying, until we do that, we can't do anything else, which is true. No other plan you have is worth a damn if we can't get all of the money out of it. To me, that really is at the root of a lot of these problems, and I think he's right that until you target that, you can't pass a Green New Deal because of the oil companies and some of the other people that don't want it, and Medicare for All. Obviously, Affleck's going to have something to say about the, you know, Blue Cross Blue Shield and Pfizer and some of these others. They're going to have some stuff to say about this. I wish he had been up there. And then you have people like Marianne Williamson, which I think is only up there as a laughing stock. And the fact that she didn't embarrass herself was a disappointment. Because her signature issue in that same Rolling Stone piece was that she wrote a prayer for Black America. And they had the whole prayer in the piece, as if Black people don't know how bad they've got it. I like when Rachel Maddow is asking about race and goes to Marianne Williamson. And then Kamala Harris is like, hold on, I think I might have something to add to this conversation. Yeah. But Marianne Williamson says, Kamala, be quiet. I'm trying to tell you how bad the Black people have it in America. So you just don't understand the inequality that, you know, Marianne Williamson, like a Chardonnay crowd. their fucking wine glass with Chardonnay over there thinking that probably
yeah.
most meaningful interaction she's had with black people is like somebody who works for her at one point or another. But you have a lot of single issue candidates. You've got Andrew Yang, who's there for to talk about
yeah.
universal basic income. He didn't really make the case for it. Like they asked him
well,
about it, and he looked confused by his own math.
I think he was shocked that he actually got to speak. I was looking at a breakdown of the candidates and who talked the most between both nights. He was the least, and he spoke
yeah.
for a total of like 3 minutes and 11 seconds.
A lot of that's his own fault, because every time they
yeah.
would go to him, Andrew, what about universal basic income? It's good. And
yeah.
I mean, literally, when Chuck Todd did those fucking ridiculous, give me your answer in one word or less, nobody stuck to that but Andrew Yang.
He's the
Andrew
only
Yang
one.
Was like,
yeah.
universal basic income, and he like stuck to that, and that was it. But I mean, every
yeah.
time they went to him, he definitely, he looked like the kid who's like, I want to pass the baton as quick as I can.
Yeah.
He didn't look like he wanted to speak at the debate. And
yeah.
so I have to look at people like that. And just think, like, really, what are you running for? Like, why are you
yeah.
there? What are you doing? Why don't you quit? I mean, I know
I
some
think,
of it is money, because they get,
yeah.
if their PAC gets so much money, they benefit from that. And you
yeah,
sell
I
more
think,
books. And,
yeah, I think it's part that and part just trying to get that message out there, getting that idea out there
yeah.
on the national
yeah.
stage.
What if he quits, like, during a commercial break? The podium's just empty. Like, the podium's empty and nobody notices. Like, he quits
yeah.
this week during a commercial break and nobody even notices or whatever. Joe Biden's like, where's that guy I told to get me a coffee fucking an hour ago? He's the slowest. Like, I didn't even think a Chinaman could fuck up a cup of coffee, you know?
Then, looking at other candidates, you have, like, Tulsi Gabbard, who...
Oh, God.
I think she had about, like, 7 minutes or so, and I think she spent six minutes reminding us that she was in the military. Literally every comment was about her being in the military, and I think for her,
she's,
I think...
She's the female Seth Moulton.
I think she is the type that she's looking for, like, a cabinet job. I really think
yeah.
that's what she's in the race for. Maybe defense or state or something like that.
Her as Secretary of Defense is the best thing that would ever happen to Vladimir Putin. I mean, I know they're going to say, again, I sound like a nut talking about all these traitors, but Tulsi Gabbard is the Donald Trump of the left. She
yeah.
has a very close relationship with a lot of
yeah.
America's enemies. When the debate moderator, her, yeah, when the debate moderator asked her about Iran and did not mention that she personally went to go meet with Assad, I thought that's like moderator negligence right there. So somebody like Sean Penn is just an idiot. Like, they just go meet with all these dictators because they think it's, like, Penn has met with Putin and Castro and Chavez, and so has Oliver Stone, because people like Putin, they literally have a classification for this, and the KGB called a useful idiot.
Yeah.
And that's what they look at somebody like Oliver Stone as, some fool that they can manipulate into getting their message out there. But Tulsi Gabbard knows what she's doing. I don't think of her as a useful idiot. I think of her as a active participant. And
yeah.
her versus Trump would be the best thing that ever happened to Vladimir Putin. I mean, that's a race
yeah.
where he wins no matter what happens. And her
yeah.
signature cue is literally pulling America out of any overseas engagements, including our military
mm-hmm.
bases, which, I mean,
yeah.
I know on one hand that sounds like a fantastic thing until you realize that China or Russia will fill that role immediately. Europe cannot even decide if England's a part of it or not. Like, their fucking debate should have been decided like 100 goddamn years ago. So, I mean, there's no other democracy on the world stage that has any foreign involvement. Europe is
yeah.
fighting amongst itself. Australia's drunk. There's no leadership in terms of democracies except for America. So we pull out. Russia and China fill that role immediately.
So do you have New Zealand terrified of Marianne Williams now?
New Zealand's like changed a lot. She's coming over. So like Marianne's like her first official state visit to New Zealand, and they like turn all the lights off in the country so her plane can't land. Like her plane gets on the runway, but they turn off all
yeah.
the lights. Tulsi Gabbard scares the shit out of me. There's candidates that I don't like, but she's the only one
uh-huh.
where, like, I don't know if I would vote for her, seriously. I think it would be the same thing as voting for Trump, in a way,
yeah.
you know. And I like it when she come out there and she has to apologize for saying that she hates gay people.
Yeah.
Her defense of that was basically, well, I served with gay people in the military. Yeah, but not if it was up to you. At the
yeah.
time, you were talking about how you didn't want to serve with you. So the fact that she uses it as an example of how she's not a homophobe to be like, well, I served with gay men and women in the armed services, but at the time you said they shouldn't be allowed to serve with you, so I don't know how close of friends you were with them. Kind of be like this thing, well, I went to school with a bunch of black people, so I can't be racist, and then at the same time I'm campaigning to kick them out. It doesn't
yeah.
speak well for her friendships in the LGBT community. You have people like John Delaney, he's the Ben Carson of the Democratic Party. He kept calling for more time, and then they would give him time. He'd be like, well, I think, can you come back and let me get a glass of water? And then they'd go to fucking O'Rourke or something. And he'd be like, wait a minute. People like that are so fucking annoying. When literally they cut into people's time and then they get time of their own. It's like, John, you once said that you hate black people. Can we go to somebody else? I don't want to talk about this. He just didn't look like, and I hate that. But they asked him today, they go, are you going to stay in the race? And since he's self-funded, because this asshole's got $100 million, I don't know what he did before. I guess he was in banking or some bullshit like that. I mean, that would make sense given his level of interest, which was all about banking and all about corporations are good. We need to pull back and all this shit. They asked him if he was going to drop out, but because he's self-funded, he goes, no, I plan to stay in it till the end. And I thought, yeah, because he's self-funded, he can do that. And so you'll have Tulsi Gabbard, who will not win a single fucking state, but because she's on Putin's payroll, she's only there to fuck up whoever the eventual nominee is.
And the worst part about her is her supporters. They remind me so much of Bernie supporters. Like, they are outrageous. Like, they are so out there and in your face, and like, it's Tulsi or nobody. They're insane. Granted, I'm sure 90% of them are, Russian trolls, but...
Like, when you said, well, her supporters remind me of Bernie's, I went, yes, and that most of them are fictional. But no, most of them are Russian bots. You know, Bernie, he has real supporters. I've met some of his supporters.
Yeah.
But Tulsi Gabbard, face-to-face, nobody knows who the fuck she is. So the fact that she's got supporters who are this behemoth and this pro-her, there's nothing about her. Think about it.
Yeah.
She's really a contradiction. On the one hand, she fought in a war to end wars. Like, she's an ex-soldier who's for ending wars. She's a Hindu, but has the same social opinions of a fundamentalist Christian. So there's all these things about her that make no sense. She's kind of caught in between demographics. So to meet people, she's not really a libertarian. She's not a progressive. There's really nobody that would have that level of passion for her unless they're just fake. Most candidates, they appeal to a very, very niche demographic. I mean, Bernie, I know why his supporters support him. Even Christian Gillibrand, I've met one person that likes her a lot. You know, even her supporter is primarily for women's issues. She cares a lot about women's issues, and that's why she likes Gillibrand. But with Tulsi Gabbard, it's like, what exactly are you supporting besides the complete isolationism and destruction of America?
Yeah.
Because most people that are isolationists are a hell of a lot more socially progressive than she is. Like, they don't have her views on gay people and abortion and things like that. So it doesn't really make sense that these groups would, and there's people like me who are neither isolationist nor socially conservative, and we really don't like her. Her fans, what did they say to you? Because I've never met one.
I'm talking before she even declared her candidacy. Like, they were all talking about how she was going to be the candidate to beat Trump, and she was the candidate that we needed, and Hillary wasn't half the woman that she was. Just outlandish stuff that, honestly, I didn't even know who she was. I just saw her name start popping up everywhere in comment sections. And I had to look her up about a year ago when I started seeing all these comments on Twitter and Facebook articles and all this stuff. And even today, like, if you go read an article about her.
Oh,
like,
she's on Real Time tonight, this evening. And I don't see how this congresswoman from Hawaii in the district with barely any people, I don't see how she's this big a deal.
I guarantee you, if you go look at the comment section after that airs on Twitter or Facebook when, they post it, just go read them. Because her supporters, there'll be comments about her everywhere.
I remember the last time I watched her on Real Time, some segment I watched of it were on YouTube, and the comments were from all these horny guys being like, what a bonable piece of ass. You know, it was all these guys being like, this president can raise my flagpole. So it seemed like a lot of, like, horny guys. That's two segments that don't mesh. Men who want a female president, but specifically because she's fuckable. You know what I mean? Like, I just feel like men will go to Hooters or a strip club for that. Those same guys probably wouldn't vote for a woman president. So I'm sort of... Then you get to her polar opposite, Buttigieg. I mean, really, you couldn't get further from her. Be like, she's a homophobe, he's gay, she wants to end all wars. I guess I'm in the minority on him, and that I don't think he really has what it takes. I mean, I don't have anything against him. I've got nothing against him. But I don't think he has what it takes to, even if he were the nominee, I think Trump would mop the floor with him. I mean, I really
think
he's such a lightweight. he's like Mayor, gee whiz, mister. I mean, he really comes off like Mayor Howdy Doody. He always looks like that kid who thinks he's going to get his Rudy moment. Put me in, coach, you know, and then they put him in the big game. But instead of the movie, like Trump just fucking knocks his head off or something, like he decapitates him out on the field. Or, oh my God, Mayor Pete lost his head or something on the field. Trump kicks a field goal that cleanly knocks his head off his shoulders or something. And then it's just like the horrible impetus. If radio died, Cuba Gooding Jr. could get killed at the end of the movie. He always looks like one of them underdog types that I think. But even beyond that, his experience level is barely better than Trump's was. Because being the mayor of South Bend, Indiana, the fourth largest city of Indiana, I mean, South Bend has the population of Birmingham. If the mayor of Birmingham ran for president, I don't. People would be like, well, he needs to be governor or something.
Exactly.
And I mean, being the mayor of the fourth largest city in Indiana is not. I'm not sure that he's experienced enough. And even though, like, I like that he's my age and running for president. I like that a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, he's only a couple of years older than we are. But so I do like that he's in our, at least in our age range, unlike the others we could name. So I do like that aspect about him. He's almost too young. Like, I think if I came out there, first of all, I'm 33, but I look like I'm 43. Even though I'm too young to run for president, they'd be like, yeah, he's probably old enough. He looks old. Like, nobody would even think to check the birth certificate. And then with Mayor Pete out there, like, he probably still gets carded and shit. He's like, gee whiz, I'm just trying to get a cranberry schnapps. Nobody wants to give it to me. He has to drink an Old Duels, those non-alcoholic beers, because they won't be in my house. But yeah, I mean, I don't really see it. And it's not that he's a bad guy, and it's not that he shouldn't try to be like a senator from Indiana, like Evan Bay's senators from Indiana that were Democrats. And I mean, it's not that he should try to move up the ranks a little bit, and maybe in 8 years or 16 years or whatever, he looks old enough to be president, he should run. But at the same time,
I agree.
So the top five polling people, Biden, Bernie, Elizabeth Warren, and then Harris and Buttigieg, and the last three kind of swap back and forth a little bit, but Warren, Harris, and Buttigieg, they're all kind of at like 9-7%. Then you go all the way down to Cory Booker. He's the sixth in the polling, or before the debates he was, and he was at like 1.5%. And so then you go all the way down to six, he's at 1.5%, and then below him, I think, was like O'Rourke was like right at 1% or something, and none of the rest of them were even at 1%. And so I look at it, and I'm like, it's possible that one of them will become the eventual nominee, but it's not possible. Like, the top five have been set for about 6 months. The polls have barely shifted at all. Even before Biden was a candidate, he was leading the field. So before he even officially – so I think those top five are pretty well set. And then the other 19 that are in there, I mean, I'm not saying they all have to drop out. Like, maybe Julian Castro can move up a little bit, but I think the vast majority should drop out tomorrow, because I just I don't see what somebody like Amy Klobuchar – she's like, oh, well, I'm literally like ninth in the polls only 6 months before Iowa. And she's not a good debater. She's not charismatic. She doesn't inspire crowds. Like, you know, people come out and give like a big campaign speech, like, how's everybody doing? She goes, she's like, meh.
Well, that's, like, that's that Midwestern attitude.
which never wins. That's why Minnesota's like 0-10 for presidential candidates. They've never fucking won. They've put up Mondale. They've put up Hubert Humphrey. I mean, every time they put somebody up, they get killed. I would be terrified if she were the nominee. Like, I'd vote for her, but at the same time, there's no fucking way she'd be Trump.
No.
She's left the worst of all possible worlds. Like, she would not inspire minority turnout at all.
Yeah.
And she's not young enough that millennials like her. But she's not old enough that all the nostalgic baby boomers are like going to pick her over Trump. And she's not cool enough to inspire anybody who's not already registered to vote, inspiring or exciting enough. If it were Klobuchar versus Trump, I could see me being like, oh, it's November 8th. I better vote. The election was yesterday. What? Oh, shit. You know, like, I mean, you just forget that even his re-election strategy at that point should just be like total radio silence. The people just forget when the election is. Kind of kept coming off as like the teacher nobody likes.
Yeah.
The principal is a buddy of hers, and she's like, yeah, go ahead, complain. I don't care. Ms. Klobuchar, I want to go to the moon. They're like, well, that's not realistic. And then it's like, well, that's kind of mean. I don't care, you brats.
I think she's trying to appeal to these swing states. And I think one of the things you saw was her saying that all of these policies that people are putting out, they're not as realistic as Democrats are making it sound.
Which
you know,
is the same campaign Hillary Clinton got beat with 4 years ago.
Exactly.
I mean, she's running an identical campaign to Hillary Clinton that did not work 4 years ago. You're right. I mean, some of them are not realistic. Well, Elizabeth Warren, they asked her, they said, what's your plan to get around Mitch McConnell? And she was kind of like, I have a plan.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's like, do you have a plan? Yes, I do. But would you like to share it with us? You know? And that's why I think Kamala Harris is so exciting. Because somebody like Klobuchar, she thinks like a senator. So does Warren. So does Sanders. They think like senators who historically have done the least of any government branch. Even the House of Representatives passes a lot more bills than the Senate does. So senators historically are the slowest, most apathetic, atrophied organ of our government. And they all kind of think like that. And I think that Kamala Harris, as a prosecutor, she sort of knows, like, you don't pass the Green New Deal through Congress, you sue the fuck out of these oil companies over and over again. Like, you bankrupt them. You make it so expensive for them to do business that solar becomes a better alternative. And I think that's what she's thinking, is like, you shut them down. That, and you can do that. That you can do, regardless of what Mitch McConnell wants to fucking do. So I think because she's a prosecutor, she can kind of see, like, here's how, when there's a will, there's a way, if you know how to do it the right way. But Elizabeth Warren, I mean, it's like she just sits in a fucking bunker and is like, you know what we should do? We should have free gay dogs for every, I mean, like, she comes up with these plans. They're not fundable. Well, I've got a new plan about toilets. I mean, she's just bombarding with strategies and plans and detailed proposals. Hillary had all that shit. Nobody cared. She thinks like a senator, and she has no way to get it through the Senate. And that's the thing about Klobuchar. Her top policy proposal is statehood for Washington, D.C., which they should have that. I'm not saying that they shouldn't. But all the Democrats, they're all trying to out-sexy each other. Oh, you can have your student loans wiped out. You can have free health care. Oh, Andrew Yang, I'll pay you to do nothing. Like, they're all trying to, like, really out-sexy each other with this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And Klobuchar is like a Midwestern senator whose top priority is statehood for the nation's capital. Like, that is so inside the beltway. D.C. should be a state. They have more population, so they should be a state. But at the same time, she doesn't fit anything. Like, she's from the Midwest, and rather than craft a proposal that would appeal to these Rust Belt people she's trying to get, statehood for D.C., which they don't give a fuck about. Like, oh, here's the nation's capital, which is 93% black. And people in Minnesota are like, huh? You know, they don't even fucking know what she's talking about. And so to inspire these states like Ohio and Pennsylvania and Iowa, like, why are we voting for you over Trump? I'm going to give D.C. statehood. Well, I guess that is her top, wildest, shoot the moon, go for the stars, wildest dreams proposal, something that is so inside the beltway, the majority of America doesn't know that D.C. doesn't have voting rights. Like, they probably don't know that D.C. doesn't have two senators. But you don't know that if you don't live there. So, I mean, she's, again, she's got a very specific inside the beltway policy as she's trying to appeal to middle American voters. It's, as people who listen know, Gillibrand is one of my least favorite candidates running, just for a lot of reasons. The fact that she's completely fake. Even though Hillary was kind of like her mentor, she's like, well, Bill Clinton, he should have been impeached. I don't know who she thought she was appealing to. It's like, that was 20 years ago. You don't get points for retroactively going back. This couple, the Clintons that you built your reputation on and sucked up to and got her seat and has been photographed with Bill Clinton a dozen times, who you went over by saying, like, oh, yeah, these people that I rode their coattails forever, he should have been impeached 20 years after the fact when there's nothing you can do about it. Like, what are you supposed to do, build a time machine and go back and ask Lewinsky questions? There's really no benefit to that position. So the fact that like, she thought that was going to be her big breakout moment and then it did nothing but backfire, to me it shows she has poor instincts. And when somebody has poor instincts, that's not the person running against Trump. And it's a little bit the same with Elizabeth Warren, where her big national reveal was to prove that she'd been lying about being Native American. 0.00001% Native American ancestry, and she took that test to prove she had ancestry. And that was her announcement for a campaign. I mean, that has all the sizzle of a wet fart. And I just look at Gillibrand and Warren and think they have poor instincts for this. And a lot of the candidates, you said it about, Beto O'Rourke. During the debates, he looked lost his fuck up there. You know?
Yeah, he did.
You saying that minute breakdown where Andrew Yang had the least, Beto was towards the top of the first night. He actually talked more than, like, I think only one or two people talked more than he did the first night.
Yeah.
Bad sign that I don't remember anything he said. Like, nothing he said stuck in my ribs at all, so I don't remember it. And the fact that he talked that much and I don't remember a single sentence he said, except for being the first one to pander in Spanish, you know, I remember that a little bit. But I talked on Twitter, I was like, who will speak Spanish first, O'Rourke or Castro? And instead it was Cory Booker and O'Rourke. And Julian Castro, he held his face till the very end because he said the thing like, well, I don't really have to prove myself. Like, my bona fides are pretty well established on this shit. But O'Rourke's first answer, first sentence in Spanish, a Mexican guy being like, you know, I like Donald Trump, but now that I've heard them speak Spanish, I'm like, what Mexican is being persuaded? Like, oh, well, Trump was my man, but now I got to go with O'Rourke.
Going back to my girl, Marianne Williamson, I don't know if you talked, but after not one, she literally tweeted out, she goes, I need to learn Spanish by 9 p.m. tomorrow.
But somebody had a tweet that had me in stitches that said, Marianne Williamson should be on the debate stage. She should be on Big Little Lies. Because you're sitting like a Williams-Sonoma couch, sipping wine or talking shit about Laura Dern. I think she's representative of what the Democratic Party has become, which is rich white people talking about race all the time. Even as they try to crowd out opportunities for black people that are right beside them, interrupts Kamala Harris to talk about race. Love that when Kamala's like, I think I might have something about this. And then Rachel Maddow was under like, oh, no, it's not your time. And she's like, wait a minute. But Rachel Maddow is another one. Both debate nights were interesting, and really there weren't any real surprises. Between now and Iowa, if the eventual nominee were not one of the people that consistently polls in the top five, it would surprise me. Joe Biden, Bernie Sanders, Kamala Harris, Elizabeth Warren, and Pete Buttigieg, that's like the opening to a joke. Two grumpy old men, a gay mayor, a black woman, and a socialist walk into a bar. You know, like, that is a motley crew if there's ever fucking been one. A lot of the other ones, they're not funny, they're not fun, except for, like you said, Marianne Williamson. I kind of hate to say it. Republican debates are more fun to watch because it's like a monster truck rally. It's like pro wrestling. There's a hero, there's a villain. In the Republican debate, like, four-fifths of the stage were villains. I mean, watching Trump shit on Jeb Bush over and over was really fun. I mean, it's the most fun Trump's ever probably been. And Chris Christie pound on Rubio, and Ted Cruz, everybody shitting on him, you know, him trying to make a joke and nobody laughing. I mean, they just had some characters. Ben Carson is a fucking character. Ben Carson, if you told me he crash-landed in a spaceship the day before the debates, I would believe it. You know, like, if you told me he's not from this planet, I would believe it. That debate was like, hey, what if we told you that Donald Trump and Chris Christie guy that we found, he's like the weirdest black guy you've ever met in your life, Ben Carson, we're going to play you. That was a debate. You know, there was no substance because Republicans against taxes and abortion and nothing else matters to them, really. So there's no real substance.
Yeah.
So I think they're more fun to watch because it really is not about what they're saying at all. Like watching the Democratic debate, they've all got a policy. And then the Republican debate, like, what's your signature policy? I want to reverse everything Obama did. I will say something that people will think is staggering, but to me, Trump had more policy than them. And all the other Republicans were like, well, we basically just want to go back to the Bush years. And for that reason, I think it's going to be hard for Joe Biden to eventually become the nominee. Because he doesn't seem to have a really good reason for why he's running other than he thinks he can win. And I'm cautious of candidates like that because candidates that run exclusively for electability, every time they go for somebody who's like a centrist and they're a moderate, Mitt Romney's a centrist, John McCain's a centrist, Hillary's a centrist, John Kerry, Al Gore, Bob Dole. Anytime you get a candidate like that, they almost always wind up losing. And that's the hilarious thing about the electability argument. George Bush is not electable. Barack Obama's not electable. Bill Clinton's not electable. Donald Trump is wildly unelectable. And they keep winning over and over again.
Yeah.
So by that token, we should go with your girl, Marianne Williamson.
Yes.
Because that seems to be the sole crux of the argument for Joe Biden. And I just know if he's the nominee, 2 weeks before the debate, he's gonna say something stupid. Like, he'll do something.
He will. He will. You know, I think everybody agrees that he had a terrible debate. I think his biggest problem, and even today, I saw him give a speech today in Chicago. He can't get out from underneath Obama. You saw that constantly during the debate. Did you know I was vice president for Barack Obama? When Barack did this, I think we all agree that Obama didn't get enough credit for the job that he did.
Sure.
But what are you doing? Like, what are you going to do? And he didn't get that message out. And part of it may be he doesn't have a message yet.
Exactly. He can't stand on his own because he has no policy proposals. He has no credible reason to be president other than he's run twice before and didn't win. But now that he's been a popular vice president, now that he was Obama's VP, he thinks he's a better candidate. He's not a better candidate.
Yeah.
If anything, he's worse because he's a lot older than he was. He's somebody else who's caught in between demographics because on the one hand, everybody says that his base of support are older, blue-collar, working-class people that probably didn't like Obama that much. If people are Obama nostalgists, they will probably vote for Kamala Harris or somebody that's not Joe Biden. Like, a lot of Obama's core support probably is going to go to somebody who's not Biden. We already saw Hillary Clinton try this, where shit was like, me and Barack Obama, we sleep in a sleeping bag together, like we wear the same pajamas.
Yeah.
Hillary tried so hard to run for Obama's third term, and it kind of didn't work, and I don't see why Biden is going to be indifferent to that.
And I think on top of that, another problem with Biden is he's been out of politics, and you can kind of see that last night. All these other people, they've been in it. They've been in the trenches and literally taken 4 years off. And you could see that he was rusty. He was out of sync. He didn't have a message. He didn't have a good night. To be honest with you, it reminded me a lot of Obama's first debate back in 2012. He got the floor mopped with him, but he came out the second debate and did really good. I'm curious to see with Joe. I'm curious to see where he goes from here, especially when you have so many on the far left that are saying that he's the establishment candidate and the DNC is just trying to, and the media is just throwing him out there because he's the next in line and they're not going to support him and all this. I think that's a serious issue that Democrats have to look at and voters have to look at, especially in these early voting states.
I'm sure people are shocked that we've gotten to almost the end of the episode and have barely mentioned our old friend Bernie Sanders.
I'd rather talk about Trump.
I seriously think the real Bernie Sanders died and was replaced by a hologram from 2016 because, I mean, literally, it was a 2016 debate performance. There was no fucking difference between what he said 4 years ago and what he said last night. I'm surprised he didn't say, well, here's the thing, Hillary. Like, I'm surprised he didn't slip up like four or five times because, I mean, he literally, he appears to be running an identical campaign to what he did in 2016. Saying the same shit. I mean, they would ask, Matt would ask him a question about race, and he started talking about income inequality, and he did the same fucking thing 4 years ago. I mean, they would ask him about race, and he would pivot everything towards income inequality. It's now even less cute, because you've got all the bitter Hillary people that think he might have cost her the race, and then you've got all of his core fan base. I think some of them have moved on to Elizabeth Warren. Some of them have moved on to Tulsi Gabbard, of all people. So, I mean, you've got, the best thing that ever happened to Bernie was having the field to himself against Hillary. And if Hillary had had a field like what we're seeing now, he would have never gotten the traction that he did. There were just so many people who, they were progressive and didn't like Hillary, or they didn't like a woman running. And I saw where like a fifth of his fans voted for Trump. If you go from Bernie Sanders to Trump, you just hate Hillary Clinton. Like, there's no... Yeah. You're not voting for anything else. There's no fucking reason that you should support Donald Trump if you like Bernie Sanders. None.
Right.
And, oh, well, he don't like NAFTA. That's not enough. One is a 100-year-old Jewish socialist. The other is a literal billionaire. There's no fucking reason you should like them. I think he's going to have a hard time. They're just a lot better candidates than he is. He's older than he was. Joe Biden, they just have Lemon and Mathow. They should drop down tomorrow and do Grumpy Old Man 3. Now that Lemon and Mathow are dead.
Give him credit. He apparently in 4 years, he did find a brush. Looked calmed.
Joe and Bernie sure a rascal scooter onto the stage next week. And I want to say something else, too. This bullshit people say, every time you make a crack about Biden and Bernie and Warren and their age, and they say that's ageism. It is relevant. Like people say, it's not relevant.
It is.
If there's one thing we've seen over the last 4 years, it's why a 70-year-old should not be president. You know, I mean, it's really hard to see Trump lose his goddamn mind. I mean, there's no question that dementia has set in to a certain extent. He was giving an interview, and somebody, his chief of staff or somebody, coughed, and he screamed at him for coughing. Like, I mean, literally, like either an aspiring dictator or a grumpy old man does, and he's both.
Yeah.
So I just look at it, and I'm like, you can't make the case that he's too old to be president and have Bernie and Joe. I mean, it just, it works better with somebody like Pete or with somebody like Kamala Harris or somebody who is, they just seem like they're from a different generation. I think the reason we spent so long talking about the debates and the candidates and getting them out there is because it really is important to find somebody who can defeat him. If he were less comedic, he'd be terrifying. If he had a sense of humor about himself, because that's the thing about Trump, he just looks like a fucking blowhard all the time.
Yeah.
Like when he come out, like when Alec Baldwin made fun of him on SNL, Trump should have been like, oh, who's that handsome guy?
Yeah,
a joke
about
it. Trump's like, we should investigate SNL. He's so transparently tyrannical But it almost undermines him in a way because he's that transparent about it. He's asked for SNL to be investigated for making fun of him. The fact that the sitting president is going after comedians, lampooning him. It's funny on the surface because he's not able to do it right now. But beneath that, it's scary because it's Ted Cruz. He had an investigation of Google, and he asked his senior Google executive, he goes, how many people in your senior executive voted for Trump? It's a scary question because you're asking a major tech company that's coming before the United States Senate, before the Congress, to possibly, you know, face regulations or taxes or be broken up or whatever else. And now if he'd have lost, it wouldn't be that bad, but the fact that a sitting president and his henchmen feel comfortable asking people, like, did you vote for him? How many people at your company support him? Because it is so punitive and retaliatory and obviously nakedly transparent. They'll say, well, pick a lane. Is he a dictator or is he treasonous and traitorous? Well, they kind of overlap because America is a democracy. George Washington could have become a dictator, but he stepped down. He said, I only want to do this 2 terms. And they put in all these, you know, George Washington put in a lot of safeguards. He himself could not become a dictator when he easily could have seized power for himself. And American democracy has always been, oh, the president can't just do these things. They can't just have a comedian. They'll have the King of England saying, my court jester, have him killed. Well, the equivalent of that is saying, Alec Baldwin, have him investigated for making fun of me. That's treasonous and traitorous in another way, which is just our ideals. And it comes at a pivotal moment because China and Russia to a lesser extent, but China especially, are competing with us in a way America has not really been competed with in about 100 years, post-World War II, but really kind of even before that in the Industrial Revolution. World dominance, so to speak, against a pair of onerous dictatorships like China and Russia that do not give a fuck about human rights or the planet or global warming. Or Putin's like, global warming, what's that pussy shit? And he, like, personally sets fire to the ice caps or something. He, like there's not even any oil. He just goes out there and starts a big fire just to get rid of them faster or something. Like, if there's no gravity, then I will be the most powerful man. It really could be the end of a lot of things that we take for granted, especially when Ruth Bader Ginsburg dies, which she definitely will in the second term.
Yeah.
She don't before then. And then he's able to appoint his son into the Supreme Court or whoever he, Don Jr.
Well, you know, like, I think the scariest part of it is, and I don't think this applies to Trump as much because he just doesn't care, but a lot of presidents look at it and say they kind of say a little restrained during their first term because they face re-election.
Right.
And then they really open up. Just imagine what he would be like in his second term. Like,
you know, you're 100% right because I remember back in 2004 debating that there was some guy I knew who really liked Bush. He's like, yeah, he's made some mistakes in his first term. And I go, and what makes you think he won't be 10 times worse in his second term? In his first term, he did the Iraq War and a lot of different things. But in his second term, he really fucked up the economy. And he really had disaster after disaster. You're 100% right. On the one hand, Trump, he truly does not care. But what does a man look like when he has nothing to lose? Bill Maher said over and over again, what happens when he says, oh, I'm going to do a third term? And Mitch McConnell's like, sounds great, boss, you know, because he's over there like, this is exactly what China wants. You're right. I mean, he'll be even more unhinged, and he'll be even more desperate, because either he'll be scrambling to find a way for a third term. He truly believes when he's out of office, he's going to jail.
Yeah.
So in his second term, he's going to be scrambling and being even more desperate. Like, it wouldn't surprise me if he just has, like, Paul Manafort's jail bombed, or he just starts killing all the witnesses, because he's like De Niro in Goodfellas. He's like, we got to get them all before they talk. You know, he's like going around just like personally killing Michael Cohen or something. But he's going to be totally unhinged because the desperation will set in of being like, if I leave office, I could go to jail, or how do I clean up everything before I leave, or how do I make sure I get a successor who's not going to prosecute me? So, I mean, yeah, you're right. It's going to look even worse. Trump could become the first American president to seek asylum overseas. Like, he goes on his last week in office, he goes to Russia and just never comes back. You know? So the FX TV show, The Americans, but they had a great final season. But in the final season, a lot of people within the Russian KGB, they were trying to get rid of Gorbachev. At the time, they thought Gorbachev was too soft. He was too sympathetic to America. He wasn't a strong man. He was trying to moderate, make it more of a democracy. And he went to America for a conference with Reagan in Washington, D.C., and they wanted to do something to make it look like he was a traitor so he would just stay in Washington, D.C. and never come back. But yeah, I could see Trump doing that. He's like, I'm going to go host the this USA pageant in Moscow or so. He just never, just like, it never comes back. So last question, do you think Trump, his allegiance to Putin, do you think it's mostly economic, or is there some level of blackmail that goes into it, or do they just really have a lot in common?
What would they have? Well, never mind.
I guess what I mean about in common is that they're both aspiring dictators,
yeah,
and also racist.
Yeah.
There's been so many great books to come out about the Russia hacking thing. Russian Roulette was one of them. The Apprentice mm-hmm. was another one. The Apprentice has a cover where Trump is walking past all these buildings in Moscow. They're kind of saying Putin groomed him from a long time ago. There was
yeah.
a documentary called Active Measures. But I mean, literally, I think what they have in common is in Russian Roulette, they talk about how Putin and his inner circle were incredibly racist towards Obama. They called him
mm-hmm.
the N-word, monkey. They never respected him. If you're Putin and you see Trump at that time period asking for a birth certificate or saying he doesn't have a right to lead based on just really
yeah.
just his race, Putin is incredibly Islamophobic. Obama's dad is a Muslim. There's a lot of similar connective tissue.
Yeah.
Over their hatred of
yeah.
Obama, over their hatred of Hillary, because Putin
yeah.
was driven to madness about Hillary. So some very old-fashioned worldviews about women, about race, about
yeah.
religion, about minorities, and just the fact that Trump likes people who suck up to him, and Putin does too, and so they kind of, Trump, you're so great. No, Vladimir, you have the most
yeah.
beautiful eyes. Neither one of them truly believes in democracy. Other motives would be like just financial, just the fact like over and over again, Trump could not raise money in America. Russian oligarchs had to keep giving him money, and the way that
mm-hmm.
Russians would get their money into America is through real estate. So there's
yeah.
a lot of real estate moguls, people that are Russian that live in Los Angeles that get a lot of money from overseas to kind of invest in properties, and then people like Trump who helped facilitate that. I mean, there's a reason Trump has been so adamant about us not seeing his taxes. I don't know what could be on a tax return that would be that bad. Like,
yeah.
'cause it's not like a tax return says, oh, I deducted this dead hooker. I paid for it. Killed a whole fucking strip club, and I deducted that. I don't know what could be on a tax return that was that bad. Says no collusion for 3 years, and then comes out the day the Mueller report exonerates him. Yeah, Russia helped us out. Collusion, what the fuck? I mean, he's admitted to collusion. Obstruction of justice, because he said he fired James Comey for the Russia thing. So the fact that he'll go on TV and admit to these crimes, you really have to wonder, what is in that tax return that he does
yeah.
not want us to see so badly?
And even still, like, even, like, as president, he won't release them.
Yeah.
What could he possibly be doing? We know your salary.
Because when he was running, he's like, well, I'm under audit. Do audits last
yeah.
5 years? 5 consecutive years, you're under audit? I mean,
yeah.
does that make
yeah.
any fucking sense? Plus people saying you can't release a tax return under audit, I mean, would hurt him in the eyes of the IRS. They're looking at your taxes anyway. So what
yeah.
fucking difference does it make if you release them publicly when if you're under audit, you have to show them everything anyway? That made no goddamn sense. They're already watching it. I totally didn't understand that, was that he would say that it'll give them more information to work with or something like that where it would hurt him with them
mm-hmm.
somehow. And I'm saying something like, they're already going through your finances with a fine-tooth comb. Maybe he's afraid that like a New York Times reporter would see something that an IRS agent would not see. Understanding why people get so turned off about talking about him is easy because, I mean, like you said, CNN, MSNBC, the nightly news, I mean, it is the Trump show. And it kind of sucks
mm-hmm.
for all the cases beneath him because there's so much shit happening that people don't know about, don't hear about,
yeah.
I mean, have no ideas going on. Investigative journalism is dead. Fucking LA Times, what they do is they go on his Twitter page and they say, oh, he tweeted this, and then they write a blog responding to it. And that's it. I mean, literally, he tweets something and they spend 10 paragraphs rebutting it. And that's their idea
yeah.
of investigative journalism. And then when it comes to like, oh, we have to get off our ass and actually go down the city dump and find some tax returns that are going to link him to Russia, they just don't do that anymore. And even
yeah.
beyond that, it's all about him. So all these Republican state senators and state legislatures and state governors, I mean, down in Alabama, who fucking knows what Kay Ivey's up to? Nobody knows because they're all talking about Trump.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's so many underlings that are getting away with shit because we're all focused on the dear leader and all of
yeah.
his fans, they only think about it is Kay Ivey, is she pro-Trump or against him? And if she's pro-Trump,
yeah.
she can kill somebody and nobody cares, even if he betrays America. That's all the time we have for today. Join us for episode 53 and some others that we may do during the summertime. Thanks for joining me, Michael. Say goodbye to our fans.
All right. So long, everybody.
Welcome back. I'll pretend that they're saying that to us.